Get your films on with the Blurgs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurgs.
When a man with a 45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
Hello, welcome to the second in a series of four of the Film Blurs. Here we are for the ASC. We are doing the use of CGI and the story of how it relates to machinery and humanity. Jeff, why don't you talk about your movie that you picked?
I mean, this whole entire concept of technology and humanity, it really is a through line through, you know, cinema for, you know, time immemorial, all the way back from like Metropolis and everything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a hard time picking one movie to try to like encapsulate that whole entire concept and that idea. And I settled on WALL-E, the Pixar film, because not only does it nails down and, you know, hones in on humanity's use and need for technology, but also like it's all CGI. It's all, you know, computer generated imagery. And it's absolutely amazing to see a movie about robots like this that have that kind of humanity. It's the gold standard, honestly, when it comes to talking about humanity's connection to technology. You know, I mean, it's all about robots that have been built to, you know, do the work of humanity, and then humans sort of becoming fat loafs and not doing anything. It's becoming more and more true every day. I used GoPuff the other day to order a USB drive. I didn't even have to leave my house, and I was like, oh, this is the future, huh? Pretty soon a drone's just gonna bring this to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing that already in some parts of the country where you have a drone drop off your food or your whatever you ordered.
And the amazing thing about WALL-E is, you know, it's minimal dialogue through the entire thing. And just how the way that WALL-E and Eva are rendered and the use of their very small dialogues, just them just saying their names in different ways. It's just like, it was really connected to me. It's a beautiful film, and it's a simple film. It's a love story. It's a friendship. And the fact that there's no like long soliloquies about destiny and over the epicness of the universe or anything like that, they were able to pull such or connect you to what are essentially inanimate objects is really a testament to the ingenuity and creative team, the ingenuity of the creative team behind it. You know, it's not basic filmmaking, but it's like pure filmmaking. You know, and I don't think you could have achieved this movie any other way but through CGI. I don't think it would have had the same sort of connection or the same sort of eloquence if it were like stop motion or if it were hand drawn or something like that. Because, I mean, the closest kind of thing I can kind of relate to is, have you ever seen The Brave Little Toaster?
Yeah.
That's the closest thing that we would get to a hand-drawn version of WALL-E. But even that, I don't think is, you know, WALL-E's leaps and bounds beyond that. And I don't think you could have achieved that, the visuals, the camera work and everything like that, in anything but a CGI film.
It's interesting how a movie starts off about a robot and then moves into its main message about, oh, look what happened to humanity and how this robot is more human than human, which is basically they did like a kid's version of Blade Runner. Because that's basically the second Blade Runner is like, yo, the replicants are more human than the humans.
Right. You usually don't get narratively this sort of film from the point of view of the actual robot. And it's usually how a human would see this. A human would befriend the robot and the robot would learn and the human becomes more human by interacting with the robot. It's like, no, the robot's just the robot. And we kind of imprint our humanity on this. It's sort of when you look at a dog and you think it has human traits, but really it's just a dog doing dog things. It's us inputting our own biases and our own facial, or our own sort of thoughts and feelings onto what the dog is doing, and it gives it a certain sort of humanity. I think that's the same ideal with Wall-E. We're kind of imprinting our point of view onto that robot, which makes it more human. The fact that it almost feels like a Charlie Chaplin film. Yeah, I mean, you've never heard, you know, Chaplin talk, but like the fact that there's just so minimal dialogue, and it shows you the strength of a really good director and actors, that they were able to imprint and impart such emotion through the main characters literally just saying their names. You know, that's always been the thing that stood out to me about this. Because honestly, you could have turned this into an audio play. It wouldn't work the same, but like the acting is so strong and the directing is so strong that I honestly like to just kind of go through this movie with my eyes closed and see if I get the same emotional resonance just from the voice acting.
Like my films that I'll talk about later, this one particularly, in addition, is almost like a mirror to the movies I picked, because this is basically like technology in this movie, Wall-E, is seen as like bad, like, and just how harmful it can be. And really, this came out in what, like 2008? So this came out in 2008. And it really predicted where we're at now with how we use technology. Like you said at the top of the episode, like this is like, we're very much heading in towards the direction of where this movie is pushing humanity.
Right. And I mean, that's honestly, that's great cinema in general. It holds a mirror up to society. And we've always been like this, you know?
Because, I mean, in this movie, humans are slaves to technology.
Right, right. And it's our fault, because, you know, ever since the first caveman came out of the cave with fire, we've kind of built our lives around the use of technology. Because, like, no one wants to work, you know, and that's just a given. The more technologically advanced we are getting, the lazier we're getting, because it's doing things for us. You can even look at it in filmmaking, for example, you know. Before, you know, you wanted to make an indie film, yeah, you needed to still assemble a crew, you still needed thousands of dollars, you needed at least to have a working knowledge of why things are the way they are and how to achieve the results you want. Now it's an app on your phone. That's always been a fear, you know, throughout cinema, books, everything like that. It's just, as things get easier, we become dumber.
It's complacency. It's like human complacency is what it basically is.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, like, it's, and so I've talked about this at length with friends about how technology, especially when it comes to filmmaking, yes, it makes things easier and things in many ways better, but also it's a step back because the fundamentals are missing now. The knowledge of how to achieve these things are missing because it's literally, it's built into your iPhone. You hit a button and it's cinema mode. Don't get me started on cinema modes on cell phones and stuff like that, on these user groups and stuff like that I'm on. I'm just going on a tangent right now. Some of these younger filmmakers are talking about, oh, how do I get a cinematic look? It's like, well, you get a cinematic look by making cinema, you know, knowing why you're lighting this way, why the camera is moving this way, what you are trying to achieve and the story you're trying to tell. All of those fundamentals are missing, because literally it's just built into whatever camera you're buying. This is the second time I've mentioned Jurassic Park this week, but when Jeff Goldblum's character goes, we spent so much time trying to think of if we could do this, we never stopped to think, should we be doing this?
The movies I want to talk about are very similar in theme to what Jeff picked, and I picked The Matrix trilogy, because, I mean, what better way of humans and technology besides Terminator? So Terminator's kind of, how can I say this? It's choppy in its continuity, so that's why, and it gets jumbled, so that's why I want to do The Matrix. The Matrix is more streamlined, and to me it's a trilogy because 2 and 3 are just one big movie, and then the fourth one is like the end of the story for me. More than anything, like WALL-E, what I come to appreciate is that in this movie and the way it uses CG, for the Machine City, everything having to do with the machine. So even when you're in the Matrix, because the Matrix is basically a machine, a lot of the stuff they're doing, like jumping from building to building or Neo flying, that's CG. Their ships are CG. The Sentinels, which are like act as the enforcer for the machines, are CG. And it really shows the struggle between humans and machines and how both are struggling, because it in this series, you kind of discover by the end of it, like by the end of Matrix Resurrections, it's a very symbiotic relationship. Like we need machines and then machines need us. There's no good or bad just because it's our fault that the machines became sentient and aware and took over.
Right. I mean, I don't know where this comes from, but we always create the agents of our own destruction. You know, like children, when you have a child, it is there to essentially replace you on Earth. And you know, technology is the same way. We create these things that make us obsolete, and then we get mad at when we become obsolete.
One thing I love besides the first one, pushing the boundaries of cinema and pushing cinema forward, is I don't want to dig too deep in it because a lot of it goes over my head, especially in the second movie. Just because, and again, I consider the second movie both Reloaded and Revolutions. I consider those one movie. A lot of it does get philosophical, and I'm not going to dig too deep in it, but I think philosophically what I got out of it was learn to live with each other. There's going to be some antagonist in your life, whether it's nature or another human being, or maybe even your car at a certain time breaking down. You got to just learn to live with it and roll with it, basically.
Right. I mean, and instead of a symbiotic relationship, we turn these things into parasitic sort of relationships.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Wachowskis for finding a way to sell us wholesale on upper level philosophy concepts and stuff like that. They packed it with bullet time. They packed our knowledge into bullet time, and that's how they were able to sell it to us.
Well, WALL-E, because WALL-E at the end, basically machine and man come together to rebuild nature. This one, we both rely on nature. In the Animatrix, there's a prequel to this whole series where the machines thrive on solar power. So that's why we become their batteries, because we generate heat.
Right, because we blotted out the sun.
Yeah.
And just thinking about the Matrix, you forget how huge that world is. You know, because not only do you have the Animatrix, you have Enter the Matrix, the video game, you have the Matrix Online. The great thing that, you know, this whole entire series has done has kind of, it you know, even from its first inception, it pushed the boundaries of what storytelling could be. You know, and it honestly, it used the idea of technology, like these new concepts like MMOs and stuff like that, and like CGI animation for the Animatrix and stuff like that. It really did use all of these different mediums to tell the same the same world story.
Well, they even use CG to do different techniques, you know what I mean? Like the Revolutionary Bullet Time was basically a bunch of images photographed at the same time and put in a computer to make it look like one shot.
Right. And the storytelling in The Matrix is great. It's fantastic. This movie would have not been as successful if it were a more standardly filmed movie. If it didn't push the boundaries of what we did with camera technology, with the bullet time and just, you know, the combat physics and stuff like that, the wire work, I don't think it would have been as successful, because the source material is so heady that people would not have been as open to receiving it. in my opinion. I think it was it's too smart, and so they had to like have a sales hook, and that they created bullet time. And bullet time, everybody, like, they even mentioned it in the last Matrix movie. Bullet time changed the game so much that now every filmmaker, every action filmmaker, is trying to come up with a new bullet time, a new thing.
Well, what I love especially about the last movie is that, like, we're almost in this world, especially in the real world, unplugged from the Matrix. We're almost at this happy medium with machines and humans, where the machines realize, hey, well, not all the machines, but a good portion of the machines, because we find out in that last movie, there's a civil war between the machines, because some machines want to work with us and then the others still want to use us. But it's a very equal footing, where there's these machines have evolved so much that they're like almost like helping us in a way. And then there's now programs that can download themselves out of the Matrix and use ball bearings almost, or nanotechnology, to make themselves into people with human feelings. Like, technology has, it's crazy how the concept in this film that AI has evolved, that they can now feel, they have human emotions, and they want the human interaction. And I think the way they use CG in that, especially for spoilers, especially for Morpheus's character, how it's Yaya, and Yaya is a program becoming a actual human being through nanotechnology, is amazing. It's a great, I never would have thought we could take story, this, especially this story, that way, and using CG that way, where there's parts of it where I was like, that's CG, but that does look like Yaya.
And, you know, this is a question we're going to have to start asking ourselves pretty soon. It's like, how far are we willing to give up control of just various tasks to smart technology? I mean, look at it now. You see that they've created programs that actually can create screenplays.
Yeah. They built the AI over, I think, in China or somewhere overseas in Asia, where it's sentient. It's online and it's sentient. The killer robot dogs from Black Mirror exist, and they are making them smarter every day. So, I mean, it's only a matter of time.
Like, Boston Dynamics is the real world version of Cyberdyne Systems.
Skynet. Yeah, they're Skynet.
I get why you would think that would be a good idea, to create an autonomous sort of war machine, but then you have created an autonomous sentient war machine. Like I said, this is like, you can't go wrong in filmmaking talking about this stuff, because this is, like I said, we are the agents of our own destruction. We are creating the things that will replace us one day or enslave us.
All right, well, I want to use a little bit of time to talk about the look of the whole trilogy, which I love, because the first movie, everything in the Matrix is kind of tinted. Before they went back and redid the color palette to match the sequels, it was like tinted brown. It felt artificial. Stuffy, like you could tell what was clearly the Matrix and what was clearly the real world. And that continues with the sequel. The second movie, both parts are, the Matrix is now green, like that green code that they read. Right. And then the real world, it's still that gray, but you feel there's a little, because most of the real world now takes place in Zion, it has a little bit of warmth to it. Like, you're in a home. That's what I loved about that. And then this next one, because technology is evolving and trying to trick us so much, I did like that it was colorful. It still felt artificial, still looked artificial, but, you know, you could tell,
right,
something's off.
Yeah, it's amazing how... And I will always say this, you know, and it's, you know, there are books on the subject, you know, people who study this, like, color, you know, really does affect how you perceive something, you know, especially in cinema. And, you know, some filmmakers don't get that, and they just, you know, they'll throw the teal and blues on, the Transformers look on there and leave it alone. But the Wachowskis and their team, they actually thought about the psychology of the colors that they were using and the way that impacted the story and how you related to the story.
Well, speaking of psychology and color, for the movie Glass, there's three different color palettes for three different characters. And one of the when they're in the asylum together, it's this very distinct pink color. And I watched the behind the scenes with M. Night where he said this color pink was used in real life in insane asylums to not only keep the patients docile, but to drive them a little insane. Because apparently that type of pink has been clinically studied that it literally drives you mad over time. Not in a way that makes you dangerous. It makes you dangerous to yourself.
Funny story. I'm about to put some family business out of here. In here, when I was visiting my sister, my older sister, who deals with some mental health issues, in a mental health institution, I remember that color.
Yeah. See.
So that is real. I like that. Like one of my earliest memories from childhood is that color. So that explains a lot about who I am as a person.
Dig deep into the history of insane asylums and mental hospitals in this nation. It'll drive you wild. That's why a lot of almost all of them are closed down and put in hospitals now.
Yeah, America. What can I? This is how we do, baby.
That was our episode on technology and humanity and CGI. That's what we got to say on it. And we will see you in the next episode. I'm Brandon Norwood.
I'm Jeff Stewart. We didn't do our AKAs for this one.
We'll keep the AKAs for our show.
All right. Well, this is our show. But like, if you're a member of the AFC and you haven't, follow us on all the social medias. Give us some love because we love you.
Yeah.
Mwah.
You've been listening to the Film Blurs Podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best.
It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindFireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.